The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
It had seemingly been a taboo topic all season, particularly amongst Cats fans. But after Friday night's win and a deep numbers dive, it can be ignored no longer. Geelong is the premiership favourite, and you could argue daylight sits in second spot. We'll discuss the Cats, a few shock victories over the weekend, as well as speak to the best on ground from Queen's Birthday Monday, Nick Riewoldt, all on the Fox Footy podcast. Hello and welcome to the show. Ben Waterworth with you, as is Mr. Backpage of the Australian newspaper himself, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
They did use some of my stuff from my article about the VFA flag.
You were mentioned in the second par on the National News Corp newspaper.
Yeah, it wasn't Backpage. You know, it's inside the fold. You know, it's a few pages.
Well, at least it wasn't sort of 13 pages in Courier Mail style.
I did find it. It was very exciting. It was a great article too. It was an interesting topic, I think.
Andrew Faulkner was the writer of that piece. And also joining us is a man getting more and more airtime on the source as the weeks go on, Tom Morris.
At least you're not saying I'm getting on the source more and more. So, yes.
Both getting more airtime on the source, though. Now, hasn't that just been a juggernaut and a phenomenon socially?
For those who don't know what on the source is, just go to Fox Footy's social media accounts because what they do, they slow down the on the cow.
They don't slow it down. That's just what it sounds like.
It is from Up the Guts, which airs on a Friday night.
It's on Up the Guts, yep. And they slow it down and it makes us all sound pissed as mules, and to put it politely. And the way they found out about it is one of the producer, director guys, I actually don't know who it was, but one of the tech guys at Fox Footy was watching KO one night. Terrific. Go and get yourself KO if you don't have it. And I know this for a fact now, but I didn't know then. You can slow KO down.
It's great for transcribing.
Great for transcribing for the little journalism nerd.
Yes.
And when they slowed, I think he accidentally slowed down some an On the Couch episode
and
or bits of On the Couch.
Suddenly Brownie.
And realised Brownie looks like he's just finished at the at a South Melbourne bar. Gaz looks pissed. Jared looks completely slaughtered. And I'm not at my best either.
And to be fair, it helps when Paul Ruse is bringing up medicinal marijuana and things like
that's
that.
That's right.
The content does help.
That's right. So it's sort of, I don't know, like, I don't. On the Source, more people know me from On the Source than On the Couch. So I don't know what that says about my On the Couch content, or maybe just people like to see other people pissed.
I feel like that's an improvement to your reputation in some quarters.
Yeah, absolutely fine. I'll take that. No, it's a really smart idea, and Up the Guts is doing well on Friday nights as well.
I would have thought you would have been more known around the traps you work on Fair or Fast.
Surely.
Speaking of which,
let's now go to Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast, Fair or Fast.
I mean, there's some paper over there.
Let's do something, Max.
Fair or Fast.
There we go. Good.
Not bad.
All right, fair or fast.
Thoughts on my falsetto?
Yeah. Sarah's probably got you covered
slightly.
I would say so. Sarah's got some good pitch.
Hello to Sarah. Speaking of On the Source.
No,
that's wrong. Ben.
How was the Hall of Fame, Tom?
Hall of Fame was great.
Okay, great.
Yeah, that's what I was referring to.
I figured.
Yeah. Ben, fair or fast, creating a new AFL logo is a waste of time.
Waste of time? No, I'd say it's a fast. But maybe a waste of cash if the reported number of dollars is spent on it, six figures.
Well, isn't that a story about that consulting firms are a rip-off more than the AFL is spending too much money? Because that's how that works,
You could go to primary schools and say, hey, let's create a new logo.
I don't think it'd be as good.
Tony Shaw offered to do it for $300.
He did. And I love how Shaw always undercuts the consultants. He's a real estate agent for a reason. He's a smart man. Yes. I'll give it to you for cheap. All right, Max.
Waste of cash, not a waste of time.
Okay. I think, more to the point, what's wrong with the AFL logo right now?
Yeah, but you would have said that before. What's wrong with the previous AFL logo as well?
I love the previous AFL logo.
I feel like we're in your kind of territory here, Max, because I look at the NBA logo, the NFL logo, which hasn't changed too much. I know the NRL slightly changed their logo this year, and it sort of revitalised the brand a little bit.
So I think what you're probably looking to do if you're the AFL is have it be able to change different colour schemes, right? Because
which is a big reason why I think they are doing this in the first place.
So there you go. So you can put it on different backgrounds and not have the red, white, and blue sort of look every time. But the NBA logo is classic. You've got Jerry West as the logo.
Yes.
You know, you could have something like that. The AFLW logo should be Taylor Harris for the same sort of reason.
How long is too long for one logo? That's the question I want answered. It's been almost 20 years now. I think two decades is long
NBA's
enough.
Been 50 years.
Yeah.
But
AFL seems to be in a state of flux all the time.
Consciously, like they're trying to consciously be moving.
For better or worse.
Yes.
Max, fair or fast, Carlton should look at Stuart Dew and Dew should look at the Blues as an option for 2020.
I can't imagine that would possibly happen.
So you're saying it's a fast?
I'd say it's a fast. I can't imagine him leaving. Gold Coast would be fools to get rid of him with how much he's helped them improve defensively.
They wouldn't get rid of him, but if Carlton came with something and Stuart Dew said, I'm interested, then why not?
When is he contracted to? I don't know the details.
We spoke to Alistair Lynch, didn't we?
Yes, to the end of 2020 at the moment.
I would certainly, I mean, it doesn't make sense for Carlton then because you're not going to be going without a coach until the end of 2020. So
no.
I imagine him staying, but he has done incredibly well, and here's a sign for why they could possibly look at an assistant coach rather than looking at an experienced coach, because you can clearly do quite well getting in someone who has the experience being under a better senior coach.
I'm sorry, Gold Coast are a basket case, and they're not a basket case in the way, they were last year. But they won on field, and it's not Stuart Dew's fault. I think Stuart Dew has done the best job he possibly can. Yeah, in fact, I think he's done a terrific job.
He's in the running for Coach of the Year.
Correct. But if you're in the running for Coach of the Year and you've won three games and have lost nine in a row, then you are a basket case.
But having said that, though, has it just sort of hit this point now that we thought they were going to be at a point for the whole season? So we came into this season thinking they'd be lucky to win one or two games.
Yeah.
Yep. Already racked up the three. It is a little reminiscent of 2018 at the moment. So they had a pretty good start in 2018 and then really dropped away. I think the concern is that the same thing has happened 2 years in a row. I think that's probably the most concerning thing about the Suns on the field at the moment.
I just get really worried. They've got a great coach and they still can't win any games for 9 weeks.
I think that's unfair because they have been performing quite well in recent weeks. Against Geelong, they had three really good quarters.
They should have beaten Melbourne, fair enough.
Against GWS, they had a good first half. Yeah, you were there, Benny, and then they completely fell off. And clearly they've tired, they've been exhausted, but you look at their numbers, we'll talk about some of the premiership profile stuff a bit later. Their defence is at least middle of the pack to average.
Yeah, okay.
That's
right,
something.
I take that back, but I think Stuart Dew's a gun, and I think if I'm Stuart Dew and Carlton came to me, I'd be seriously thinking about it.
What would the AFL think about that?
That would hate, and so would the Suns.
It's a lesser version of going for a Clarkson, to be fair. For a great current coach.
That's exactly right, yes.
Fair enough.
Ben, fair or fast, umpires should harden up and cop being called names like maggot and flog.
Jesus, this is an interesting one. Oh, look, I think fair, but also trying to put yourself in that shoe as well. But is this more about the umpire standing up or the AFL trying to more, from a league-wide, holistic perspective, sending a message to fans?
I think it's both. Matthew Nichols pointed this umpire out. They called him a bald-headed flog.
The fan.
They called him a bald-headed flog. Yep.
So what is the issue that we have with this? Is it that the umpire is taking offence? Because if we're having a problem with someone taking offence to being insulted, let them. If they are insulted, they are insulted. That's how offence works. We can't be critical of Matthew Nichols in this situation. Can you be critical of the AFL for the way they've gone about this? Absolutely. Because they have suddenly started.
No heads up.
No, absolutely. Mm. No messaging whatsoever. Yeah. No talking about how, oh, no, we're going to crack down on crowds insulting people at their workplace, which is fair enough, to be honest. I'm more in the camp of, hey, we're trying to defend people's free speech, right? But their free speech is insulting someone. You know, it's still not nice, right? Yeah. You know, we don't need that in society to insult people. I understand people want to boo at the footy about an umpire decision. That's okay. But personally insulting them is a bit worse. If the AFL had explained that they're going to have a crackdown on all this, I think it'd be a lot, going down a lot better.
That's the biggest flaw in this whole story at the moment. And as Robbo said on 360 last night, if the AFL are finally going to say something about this and put their stance on the table, actually do it in person, do it in a press conference, do it via, not as ideal, but maybe via video release via the website or something rather than a press release where it has to be put out in written communication.
This was embarrassing on Saturday at Marvel Stadium. That fan was kicked out for calling Matthew Nichols a bald-headed flog.
No, but again, what is your specific concern with that?
Is it about the AFL
level of language?
My opinion has always been the same. Unless it's racist or sexist or personally vilifying, which I don't believe bald-headed flog is, then I think it's not play on in a sense that we should just celebrate it, but I don't think it's worth getting kicked out over, nor do I think it's worth Matthew Nichols stopping it. Some would argue, well, it's about his physique, it's about the way he looks, but bloody hell, like, how soft are we going to get? I feel like racism and sexism not on, family stuff not on, clearly unbelievably personal abuse is not on, like about an illness, for example. But calling someone a bald-headed flog, we've got to take a step back and think.
Also remember, we can't look at that one insult in a vacuum, right? Matthew Nichols, as an umpire, has been getting insulted for his entire career.
Yes.
Correct?
Yep.
And this is a thing that you have when you talk about bullying, right?
Yeah.
Kids take so much, and they finally hit back, and then they get in trouble for punching back or however it goes. But it's because it gets to a tipping point. Perhaps this was just a tipping point for Nichols.
Maybe it was, and we don't know. And the other frustrating element for me was this happened on Saturday. The Frankie the Fan is what his stage name was. It's what he called up radio for as. He went on radio and he explained his story and the stories went out and we wrote a story for foxfooty.com.au and I contacted the AFL and as of, It's 1:36 on Tuesday now. We still don't know the story from their end. So all you can go is on what this guy... So they don't help themselves.
Yeah.
If the AFL got their ducks in a row, and I know it's not easy over a weekend, they've got staffing issues, they've got other games to look at, but if they got their ducks in a row earlier, we would know the full story by Monday, and probably by now the story would be dying. But what's going to happen is, I think a press release or something will come out this afternoon or maybe on Wednesday, and it will... And it will reignite the story. Not too dissimilar from Dane Rampey climbing up a post.
Thinking about there's a similar trend to the Dane Rampey stuff.
And a secondary Fairer Faster this, Ben, I'll ask
Yes.
Fans need a list of banned words in the footy record, Fairer Faster.
In the footy record?
Do not say these words.
No, Fast. I think the record's probably a tad too expensive at the moment. I don't think too many fans are picking up the record. It's still still a great publication with some great yarns in there, but I don't know if that's the most effective way to communicate that. Do they need a list of words? This is very common sensey, isn't it?
If you give a list of words you can't say, it's what they're going to say.
It's like, where do we stop?
Yeah. That sounds a bit soft.
Well, you know the maggot story from a couple of weeks ago?
Yes.
My understanding is that the person on the receiving end of that actually thought it was an F word rhyming with maggot.
Right.
And that's why the offence was taken, which makes perfect sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, move along.
Don't call anyone a duck.
Yes. Max,
hi.
Fair or fast, is Geelong's flag to lose?
I would still say fast, because if you gave me the option of Geelong or the field to win the premiership, I'd take the field.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What balance would you have? What ratio would you have to those?
I would have Geelong probably 30 to 40%.
Okay.
To win.
What do you have, Ben? That's a really interesting way to look at it. Geelong versus the field.
No, I've swayed. As I said off the top, this has been like a taboo topic, I think, for a lot of people. Unconvinced, I think, by...
Especially Cats fans.
Unconvinced that Geelong is in the premiership contention. I think because they'd been for a couple of years, made it to the preliminary final, fallen short. They thought that maybe that was the chance for Cats fans to actually do it. But now they've actually reinvigorated the side. The game plan is sound all across the field. They've had a good run with injury. At the moment, I would say they're 60, 70% chance.
60, 70 is high.
But the thing is, I wouldn't give any team really at almost any point that much chance of winning the flag just because so much can go wrong.
Yep, that's
particularly
right.
At mid-season.
Injuries-wise, if they have a terrible run of injuries and leading up to the finals.
And form. We've seen teams
They will have a dip at some point.
Yes.
That's often a larger training load leading into finals. Geelong, they're going to make the grand final, I believe.
I would think so, yes.
So then it's just a matter of how they perform on that day. But they're so efficient. Mm. Imagine playing against them. But every time they scored again, all of a sudden you're down by 30 points and you haven't done that much wrong.
But the efficiency is also the problem, because that's when you get the question of whether it's sustainable.
Well, so far it has been. 11-1.
Sort of like a volume inside 50.
They've been one of the most accurate teams of all time, is my understanding right now.
But 3 months is a big sample size for that. Surely we can say that's the way it's going to continue.
But it still declines. So you look at, we looked at some numbers last week on foxfootball.com.au about accuracy and teams that are performing really well. And the point that was made to me by Champion Data was that this will come back to earth. I think this time last year, Collingwood was one of the most above average performing, more than you'd expect, goal kicking wise sides in history. And they fell back down to very good, but not elite. Yep. That's what happens. Teams regress to the mean.
But still made the grand final.
I like regress to the mean.
It's a very important
statistic. But still made the grand final.
Yes. And I think Geelong will probably, they are obviously the leading contender for a reason. Mm. But you look at historically, teams that finish first win the flag more often on the ladder, even though in recent years that hasn't been the case, but they still don't win it majority of the time, because you can have a lot of good football teams once you get to the finals at this point of... In 2019, teams are good. That's my point.
Max.
With the Cats, there's still a pretty high ceiling, I think, for the Cats as well.
Yeah, I agree.
But also the same, I think, can be said particularly about the Pies. The Pies got a very high ceiling.
And I still believe in GWS.
If they had the grand final at Giant Stadium, they could win it.
Yeah, I believe in them for whatever reason. I just believe in them. I don't think they're losing another prelim is my point about the Giants. I think they're going to win it. If they get to a prelim, they're winning it.
Mm. Do you think that's the most likely grand final right now, Geelong GWS?
I've got to see how the ladder...
And the matchups in the finals are better, obviously.
Ben, fair or fast, Jordan Lewis deserves a farewell game regardless of VFL form.
Yeah, so I think from a fan's perspective, fair, but whether he actually gets it is another question. He was fantastic at the Hall of Fame on AFL 360 on Tuesday night. Very humble in saying that I don't care if I finish in the VFL or AFL. I know where I sit. I've had a great career, et cetera, et cetera. So I would like to see him have a farewell game. Four-time premiership player, 300-plus games. A player of his stature deserves a proper farewell.
Because Melbourne aren't going to play finals as well.
That has to be a big factor. You can afford to do it if you're Melbourne and 4-10.
And you can paint it whatever way you want. Oh, we've had a few injuries. He's played reasonable in the VFL. Get him in. I agree. Four-time premiership. I know not for Melbourne. He's playing his place for Hawthorn, but he's had a significant role at the D since he arrived.
Yeah.
He was a really important player first year and leader. Last year, he was probably a 50-50. He had some off games, but on the whole, I think he was a pretty important player,
really important,
but a very important
finals.
Leader. And this year, he's been a very important leader that struggled to get on the park.
It's a lesser version of Luke Hodge to Brisbane.
It is, which is what we always saw it as at the time. Yeah. It's been absolutely a worthwhile investment for Melbourne.
Yeah.
Max, fair or farce, the GWS Giants should offer Stephen Caniglio the captaincy as an enticement to re-sign.
I think that's a farce specifically because I don't know that you can use the idea of leadership as a bargaining chip.
Did you hear Chris Judd talk about this last night?
He argued this really well.
Very interesting.
So I haven't seen that, but I think from you bringing it up to me just right now and having not heard the argument before, that is weird to me, the idea that you can suddenly appoint someone a leader based on, well, you've signed with us, so therefore you get to be the captain. It's not something you are given. It's something you, in a sense, earn.
It's exactly what Matt Woody was saying.
Over many years as well. I think it...
He used the word equity, didn't he?
It kind of demeans what the Cats would have built, particularly the Cats who are going so well this year and have such a strong
I'm talking about the
culture.
Giants.
Oh, sorry, the Giants.
To keep him. Right. Offer Caniglio the captaincy to keep him.
Well, he wants the captaincy.
I think it's the same whichever club you're talking about. And I think he's clearly a candidate for the captaincy at the Giants anyway, but they've got reasonably good leaders right now.
Well, Davison Ward, no other pairing has had such a long stint as co-captains, as two players ever in AFL history than Ward and Davis.
It's a very footy in Sydney thing.
I'm saving the hardest of the last one, Ben, and you're going to be on the receiving end of it, but Max, you can also chime in.
Yeah,
hardest
to
last.
Fair or farce, Gill's inability to call out racism when Adam Goods was being booed will stain his legacy as AFL CEO long after he's done with the job.
I think that's a big mic drop. I would say farce, but he admitted to Neil Mitchell on 3AW, I think on Monday or in recent days, that he made a big mistake.
He said that before,
In the immediate aftermath of not recognising it. So which brings us probably to the topic of what happened on Friday when the AFL released this very strong and united statement condemning their sort of reaction to the booing of Adam Goods all those years ago. The cynic in me kind of says, why are you releasing this when the big, highly talked about Adam Goods documentary is released on that day? Why couldn't you have done it maybe even earlier in the week or when you had the heads up that this Goods documentary was coming out and they've sort of let the media storm take it with them? So that was the cynic in me that
it was a classic
like
Friday
that.
Afternoon, well, though. It's Friday afternoon, that's why.
That doesn't make it wrong to apologise. They were still right to do it.
Yeah.
You can be both.
But if it's on a Friday afternoon, it shouldn't have been on a Friday afternoon. For such a strong statement, shouldn't that have been, you know, on a Monday or in a much more prime time statement releasing time slot?
They must have had their reasons. But just kind of pivot back to Gill and his legacy.
Yeah.
If it doesn't stain his legacy, it certainly affects
I think it affects, but it doesn't stain.
I think we are constricted by the terms of fair or farce. Either saying completely yes or completely no.
No, there's more nuance to this, I understand that.
To a degree, yes, his legacy is stained by this, absolutely. The AFL as a whole is stained by this and their handling of the situation.
Yes.
It is disgraceful. The problem is that a large proportion of the AFL viewing public does not think that they have made a mistake.
Well, they think they never... these people, and I've spoken to some of these people... They say, I didn't boo Adam Goods because he's black. I booed because I don't like him and he was a diver. And I think...
Which he did not get an above average number of free kicks.
No, that is right. But that is a simplistic view of old school racism. New age racism is far... Without getting too deep in this too long, it's far more nuanced and covert.
In a way, I understand
what it was.
There are elements to this. There are ways that you interpret what Adam Goods does differently than you would if he was white.
Yeah.
You are some of those booers.
Yeah. Now, what you said before about the being offended applies in this case to me. If Adam Goods feels if it's racist, then people
this.
Need to stop.
I've always thought
because
this.
He thinks it's racist. Mm. And I don't care what the booers think if the person on the receiving end is offended by it. Mm. In a racism realm.
What bothered me was we did a story about Gary Ablett getting booed in the Friday night game, and 90% of the comments on our Facebook post were, well, when are the AFL and the AT clubs going to apologise, lol? Yeah. It's But yeah. A, very clever.
Yeah.
You couldn't tell because I was hiding your comments that everyone was posting it.
Yeah.
And B, these are people with just a lack of understanding of the topic and a lack of empathy in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
there are people, I mean, Sam Newman coming out and just saying, well, we're not racist. It was because he taunted the Carlton fans. Go away.
Yeah, it's a very interesting discussion. But you can't move. It appears to me as if you can't move people's perspectives on it.
No, because you are. They feel you are attacking them as a person and saying that they are a racist.
That's right, and that the whole term is completely different to what it used to be.
Yeah,
when black people were told to sit at the back of buses, it's nowhere near as obvious as what it was.
I am 100% sure I have had some opinions or thoughts in my life that were racist.
Absolutely.
Because we come from a perspective that is very different to certain other people, being middle-class white people. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
Go and see a movie, if you haven't already, to the listeners, called Crash. Sandra Bullock's in it, and it's about the demographics of racism in America, and it is so interesting about how people's perspectives are changed by their upbringing and the world in which they live. Crash. It's from about 2005, I think, and it's a great film.
Have you seen one of the best film?
Yeah, it's an awesome film.
Have you seen The Final Quarter yet?
No, I'd like to see it though. Mm. 75 minutes long. I was driving along this morning and I was listening to I can't remember the director's name. I should. Who was speaking to Jared Whateley?
Ian, someone. Yes,
who was speaking to Jared Whateley on SEN, and he just sounds like a fantastic man. He Adam Good saw it with a couple of mates, Michael O'Loughlin being one, Tanya Hosch being another, and then Adam Good wanted to see it, this is back in December, and see it by himself.
Yeah.
So he went back in and he watched it by himself again just to get a real handle on it.
Mm.
Someone else said to me yesterday that Adam Good is only a part of this because he wants to get back in the media. Like, it's a cynical perspective that's just completely factually incorrect.
Yes.
It troubles me that people still can't see the light, but I guess we can never... influence every single person in society.
No. Very very wide ranging edition of Fair or Farce today from Tom Morris.
It doesn't deserve a singing yet.
No, fair enough.
That was serious.
Let's talk about, we've already sort of half touched on it, what was profiled on the couch on Monday night, which was the premiership profile, which I think fair to say, Champion Data and Jared Healy really did drive this discussion. So they talked about specifically the Tigers and how they've fallen back a little bit, the Eagles, the Power probably should be rated a little bit higher in people's expectations, and then, of course, the Cats as well. And then on foxfooty.com.au, Maxi, you last night profiled where every club sits in this premiership profile. So what is the premiership profile according to Champion Data from the last decade, I suppose?
It is the last 10 years.
Before you answer that, Jared went to Champion Data yesterday morning, Monday morning, and said, I need some common characteristics that are across all premiership teams, and they came back with those attributes.
These
and
five.
That's how the premiership profile started. So like it's actually Jared's brainchild.
Yeah.
Not bad for a person in his mid to late 50s.
So I will say, don't take this as gospel because of that. It is sort of just, it is an assortment of characteristics of premiers. I mean, other characteristics include winning the grand final. You know, they would be 10-0, so things like that. It's a strong statistic, and these stats are all very important, and especially given the way the game is played in modern footy.
Yes, and the other asterisk is we used to use the Premiership Quadrant as well, which was used for so long, and then once the Western Bulldogs won the flag, it hasn't been
spoken on
since.
They came from well outside the quadrant.
So the key is the Bulldogs still would have fit into this profile.
Yep.
So the 10 last premiers were all in the top five of the AFL for the following key statistics. Points differential from turnovers.
Yep.
So points scored v points against.
Yep.
Points scored from the forward half.
Yep.
We hear a lot about that with
forward half game, territory battle. Yeah.
Opposition scores per inside 50.
Yep.
This is one where the Swans have been so dominant in recent years of just once teams did get the ball forward, they're
absorbing.
Defense, exactly.
Mm.
Forward 50 ground balls. So ability to win the ground ball in the forward 50. Richmond obviously doing quite well with their smaller forward game. And post stoppage contested possessions, which was this sort of in vogue term that came up earlier this season.
Layer two stoppage.
So contested possessions, you can get them during a stoppage, you get them outside of one. These are ones that come outside of the stoppage after one because they are a lot more pure, they are a lot cleaner, they are a lot more likely to be damaging. Melbourne was a prime example of this in the Queen's Birthday game. They won the contested possession count by something like 30, but I imagine a lot of those were handballs in close, not getting a lot out of them, whereas Collingwood were getting downfield kicks from their contested possessions.
Yeah.
So what we
I think the way to look at that last one, from my understanding, without being a Champion Data buffon, is that
you've got to
look at a stoppage like you've got Saturn's rings around it.
Yes.
So you've got one layer of Saturn's rings really close, and that's the first contested possession, then a second layer, then a third layer. Mm. And where Melbourne really struggle, and you can just you can see it with your eyes, is that second handball to layer two, because they're just going to a still person about a metre away who doesn't even want the ball at that time. No. Whereas the good teams like Geelong, they find a release player, and those second contested possession disposals are really quite damaging.
Yeah. And so what we see with the premiership profile in 2019 so far is that one team matches it. And it's Geelong.
Mm.
So they are first in four of the categories. And the only category they're not first in, they're second, which is opposition scoring per inside 50s. And we know how good their defence is. Yeah. The other teams that really sit at the top, Collingwood and GWS, they're each in the top five for four of the categories. Yeah. Collingwood's big failing is in forward 50 ground balls.
Yep.
Interesting.
And GWS's big failing is in points from the forward half. They're sixth in that.
A little bit surprised about the Collingwood, the sixth ranking in 450 ground balls, considering that a lot of their forward line is quite versatile. With the likes of the Goey, I suppose Jamie Elliott's always been like a bit of a lead-up forward runner.
Stevenson's down there, though.
Forward. Yeah, a bit surprised by
that. They do take a lot of marks, though. I don't know the stats, but I presume that they actually clunk quite a few in the forward at 50.
Yes, that's a problem. Yeah.
The panellists really talked a lot about Richmond, who, of course, went down to the Cats on Friday night. And a lot of the talk about the Tigers has been their bad luck of injuries for the first time in a couple of seasons. Yeah. But from a style perspective, it's just not clicking at the moment for the Tigers.
Yeah, and they rank, their best ranking is fifth in points from turnovers. So they're getting their turnover game going. But everything else, they're in the bottom 10.
Mm.
You know, they're 11th for points from forward half, 13th for defensive opposition scoring per inside 50s. 11th for forward 50 ground balls. This is the Tigers. That's their trademark. Yeah.
So points from forward half, is that just keeping the ball in your forward half for as long as possible?
Winning the ball back in your forward half scoring.
It's the source of the score. So you see the score sources come up on Fox Footy coverages quite often now, where turnovers or stoppages or kick-ins, where are you getting your points from? And the forward half turnovers are so important now because that's where so many teams at the top of the ladder are getting most of their scoring.
So I'm just trying to think about the way it looks. You've got an opposition defender streaming out, missing a target from half back.
Yep.
You're getting it and then kicking a goal from there.
Yes, that's the start of the scoring chain. Yeah,
okay. Opposition defenders ideally under a lot of pressure because of trying to lock the ball in the forward half game. So in terms of the power as well, so you did a story last week about accuracy, which you talked about before. The power of been pretty inaccurate in how they've been shooting for goal at the moment. But from a style perspective, it all adds up to them actually probably being in contention for certainly a final spot, maybe even top four.
Yeah, they're fourth overall, which I assume the overall rankings are just a collating the five individual rankings. So the Power are fourth for scoring from turnovers and fourth for scoring from their forward half. So the manner in which they score is sustainable. Mm. That's the key to come from all this. If you can believe in Port Adelaide based on how they've scored, their problem is ground balls in the forward 50, they're last in the entire AFL. So that could be a problem for them going forward. I could see that being exploited. But otherwise, the power, scoring-wise, they look good. And that's where so much of their issue came last year because they changed their style around. They were trying to play out from the back and the line was playing at a different level. It was all a bit strange and Ken Hinckley sort of changed that up and clearly that's worked.
I like the premiership profile, Ben.
Yes, it might work.
Keep an eye on it.
The other one, just briefly, West Coast also is 11th. So they are not looking very good and they are worst in the league for post-stoppage contested possessions. And
are they?
Champion's always been quite critical of their midfield. Their numbers don't look as good as people think they are based on the name value of their players. They do not get those clearances that we expect.
Well, we go from the worst to the best. Our special guest this week polled three Brownlow votes at the MCG on three occasions. But on Monday, 1.5 seasons after retiring, St Kilda's all-time longest-serving captain made it four BOGs at the G. And on Fox Footy podcast debut, it's great to welcome the soon-to-be touring Freddie Mercury impersonator, Nick Revolt. Hello, Nick.
That's a good intro, actually. There might be something in that. Kid parties, or I'm not sure. There might be a way to commercialise this.
Can you remember that's all right. Can you remember the three other best on grounds you had in the Brownlow at the MCG?
I kicked nine there twice.
Yes.
But I think I only got the two on one occasion.
Yeah, that's
against
correct.
Melbourne.
That's correct.
Yeah,
round 8, 06 was the nine goals against Carlton. He tore them to shreds. Round 15, 2008 against Carlton. Also got the three then. And then most recently, round 17, 2015 against the Demons.
I remember that game.
Pretty good day. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, can I ask Nick a question, Ben?
Of course you can, Tom.
When did you come up with this idea, and who did you have to vet it through before actually confirming that you're going to dress up as one of the greatest rock stars of the 20th century?
Oh, there was an exhausting vetting program, program happening, particularly in the Revolt household. Now, I came up with the idea. So I watched Bohemian Rhapsody on a flight earlier in the year, and we always get right into Halloween in our family. My wife being American, most often we're in the States for Halloween. So I thought, when I watched it, because I love Queen, and I thought, well, that's my Halloween outfit this year. I've got it. That's what I'm going to do. So then when the opportunity presented itself with Big Freeze and I was invited to slide, I thought, well, it's Queen's birthday.
Yes.
What better way to tie it together than to go as, you know, Queen Freddie Mercury. So the occasion just lent itself really well, you know, through the bit of the play on words. So I started investigating a costume, and I mean, there wasn't a lot to it really. Obviously, just the jeans and a few studded pieces and a singlet. But it was all going to be in the hair and the moustache and the teeth. So I had a bit of help from the girls at Fox Footy, and we managed to come up with the outfit a couple of weeks ago. And then when you had to ring through and actually explain what you were going as, so they could sort of piece the day together, the producers, I think they saw the opportunity for a little bit of production value, and that's where it's really grown from.
Was there any... we know that Catherine's a big help for you, Roo, but were there any really intense training sessions at home and how to extend the bicep while you look at your arm and bring it back to you? Because to me, the teeth were great and the costume was great, but it was actually the physical action of your right arm that made you Freddie Mercury yesterday.
Oh, man.
Did you practice
it? I was talking to Chris Judd yesterday on the stage. It was like, of all the things you do in your career, you can play for 17 years, but this is going to be the one thing that you're actually remembered for more than any of the stuff you did on a footy field, which is, you know, it's probably not a bad thing given the cause. But so when I said to Kath, this is what I'm doing, and I dress up and I go down the slide, like, you know, she was cool. But when a bit of dancing came into the mix, that's when I could really sense some apprehension from her end. More around the fact that I was just going to embarrass her and embarrass the family, because I've gone down the act, the dancing and singing around thing before for a St Kilda Virgin commercial, which you might remember.
I do remember that, yep.
And I swore after that was going to be it. Never again. But given the cause, there was a bit of peer pressure coming. It meant that I had to go all in. I had to get right into it, or don't bother doing it at all. Because if you go half-assed, you probably look a little bit silly. So I did. I think I watched Live Aid. I watched it maybe 10 times, and there was a few just private rehearsals where I was in front of the mirror and just. You know, even in the so I was the first one there yesterday, and I even just took a moment just in the sort of shower area where no one could see, to just go through just, you know, what I was going to do when I got on stage, because I didn't want to sort of half try and do it and not pull it off, because you might as well not do it. That would look even worse. But no, lucky the feedback's been generally positive.
It was the full commitment to the role that made it, I think. So well done, Roo. And as the commissioner of the Fox Footy Fantasy NFL League as well, thank you for getting us on the front page of the paper. We appreciate the exposure. We are a footy podcast, so we should probably talk about the game, Collingwood beating Melbourne by 41 points, I believe it was. What did you take out of that game analytically? The Pies getting back to their winning ways, but not really at their best, and the D's probably season over for them.
Yeah, I got to admit, the first quarter was really tough to watch, because I was just watching sort of, I don't have Twitter, but I was receiving a lot of feedback, and I was finding it hard to focus on the footy.
Fair enough.
And not the social media stuff. But look, Collingwood were, when the game was hot, they did what they needed to do. I've sort of felt that about Collingwood for a while, that they've just got that ability to flex their muscles at the right time. The game's hot. Stevenson is... you know, on fire early. They're getting the ball in. They deliver it so well, and it's just so clear how they just play to each other's strengths. So you could probably pop Jaden Stevenson in, you know, any other forward line in the competition, and I'm not sure he'd fare as well as he does in Collingwood's because of the way they utilise him. You know, that they were brilliant when they needed to be. And it was amazing, really, that the game tightened up the way it did. If Tom McDonald kicked that goal about halfway through the last quarter and got it to 14 points, you know, we were almost scrambling as to try and work out a way, if Melbourne were able to eventually get over the top, how you'd actually describe the game. Such was Collingwood's dominance. But Melbourne's problems, they were more of the same. They won the ball inside, plus 27 contested footy, which is usually a pretty good indicator, but it was all in the junk. It was all in congestion. Mm. And then once the game was on the outside, it really suited Collingwood and Melbourne's efficiency going forward, their decision-making, their cohesion and their delivery continues to be a real Achilles heel for them.
You spoke about the delivery, Roo. I suppose Melbourne last year, they didn't have him for that final series in the back end of that campaign that they had. But Jesse Hogan is at the Dockers now. How much are the Demons potentially missing Jesse Hogan, even though that he wasn't in their side in the back half of last year and Sam Wiedemann had a finals series to remember? Is he that much of a chasm for this side at the moment, or are there bigger issues at play?
Oh, he's missed, but I think there are greater issues. So last year, Melbourne were a really good forward half turnover team. So what happens is when you turn the ball over in your forward half, or when you turn the ball over anywhere for that matter, your forwards have organically just got some split from their opponents because they've moved up the ground in a defensive sort of formation, and you get that little bit of sag. And then when you turn the ball over, you've got that split. So they're not turning the ball over in the forward half this year, Melbourne, like they did last year. So they're not getting as good a looks at the ball. They're another year in. So Jesse Hogan took the best defender last year. He's not there. So now all of a sudden, McDonald, who is a defender turned forward in his second year in that position, he's getting the best defender. Wiedemann's getting the second best. So they just don't look like the same team, and I think it's because of the way they're playing, they're not getting those turnovers, and the shuffle effect, like having a big, genuine key forward, they're hard to find. They're hard to find, and not many players in the history of the game have been able to go from a key defender and transform into a key forward. Lots of guys do it the other way around, but Tom McDonald, you know, just looks like a player completely void of confidence and form at the moment.
So is it too early then to say, is it too late to say maybe that they made a mistake in allowing Jesse Hogan to leave, Roo? Because not only has it hurt the team in general, but it's actually hurt Tom McDonald, who benefited from Hogan's presence last year.
I don't think it's a mistake given the circumstances, which have really come more to light since he left, haven't they, with what occurred earlier in the year and some of the conversations around the battles that Jesse had while he was in Melbourne. So I don't think you can say it was a mistake in hindsight, because I'm sure Melbourne were equipped with a lot of that information that perhaps we weren't at the time. But there's no doubt it has an effect, and their ability to, the compensation really in the end ended up being Stephen May, didn't it? It's a different player. It's at the other end of the ground, and he hasn't had a great start to his Melbourne career, but he'll play a lot of footy there. But yeah, look, it's probably just it's a bit simple to say it was a mistake.
You've been around footy for a long time now, but you've been in the media for a year and a half, and we didn't have any coach sackings last year, but we've had two or one this year, in Brendan Bolton and Brad Scott left North, and as you can appreciate with the media cycle, people's eyes, rightly or wrongly, then turn to St Kilda. But at 5-6, they haven't had a terrible start to the year. But how do you read the Saints' prognosis as it stands at the moment, at the halfway point of the year?
I think they've done well. I think they've done really well, given the injuries, and they get spoken about. But I don't, just how important Dylan Roberton, Jake Carlisle, Jaron Geary. So from a leadership point of view, I mean, Dylan Roberton has been such a good player for that football club. The way he intercepts and the way he rebounds, we know how important that position is in the modern game. So he's been a huge loss. Jack Stevens won four out of the last six best and fairest or something like that. And he hasn't been there pretty much all year. So they've had significant impediments to actually putting together a decent body of work. And the Port Adelaide game aside, which I've softened a little bit, I'm probably prepared to give them a pass given the illness that went through the group. They've been in every game outside of that one. So, I think they've been as pleasing from a fan's point of view as you could have hoped for coming into the season, given what's occurred with injuries and illness and form.
Rue, last one from us, and it's a very important question, probably the most important question of this entire chat. You were a big-name recruit to the Fox Footy Fantasy NFL League, as I mentioned earlier, and you were a first-round playoffs loser, unfortunately. Let's not mention my performance.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, second highest scoring team of the week that week. So,
and it sounds like an excuse to me, Maxie.
And lost to the eventual
premier. I just ran into a juggernaut. Hey, so, sometimes you just come up against an unplayable delivery, Tom.
Yeah.
That's what I caught.
I've had my fair share of them.
What are you planning season two? Do you need a change of strategy? Is it just bring it all back? You have faith in the boys? What's the plan?
I'm going to change my name, team name. It's going to be a play on Freddie. There's going to be a Freddie Mercury element.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. What was it this year?
And I think that might. What was my team name this year?
I believe it was Trump Cards.
Trump Cards.
Oh, yeah. Trump Cards. Yeah.
Yes. Very American.
Yeah. Well, Kathy's from the South.
I had a little picture of Donald in the.
Yes.
In the. As my mascot, I might have to change it up this year.
To be fair, Jack, who was also in the league, had a more offensive team name than that. So let's
not say it.
Let's not mention. But
well done, Ruth. Keep milking Freddie Mercury.
I will say, we're dealing with a lot of issues in football at the moment. Mm. Score review, crowd behaviour. If the AFL needs any guidance in terms of how a commissioner should operate, they only need to look at our own Maxie Lawton.
Yes.
He is the greatest commissioner, and it is just an honour, really, to be a part of the Fox Footy Fantasy League.
Superbly said, Roo. You've had a very, very good 24 hours. Congratulations on everything yesterday, not only your own performance, but just the attraction you were able to bring to the occasion and the day and the cause, most importantly, was first class. So well done, and look, enjoy your weekend off. I think you got a weekend off there on the Fox Footy duties, so enjoy your weekend off.
That'll be great. Yeah, no, I know it was great to be a part of what was an amazing weekend on the footy calendar. We know how big it's become, and I guess obviously having been exposed to it through Matty's match on the footy calendar as well, which is coming up round 15 against Richmond. Really, really excited with that approaching. So only too happy to play my role for another great cause in Fight MND. So thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Roo. Much appreciated.
Well done, Roo. Pick one's yours if you want it.
Thank you very much to Nick Riewoldt for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. How about that wrap for Maxie? One of the great commissioners in the league.
I've never seen Max blush as much as he has just then. Oh, I feel sick. No, you should get that cut up for sure, Max.
It was good because I kicked both of you out of the league after the first season. So that was
very justified.
You didn't kick me out. I know you kicked someone else out at Fox Sports, but it wasn't me.
Too soon. Let's now go to the mailbag. And there's a lot of questions streaming in off the Fox Footy Twitter account.
Yes.
Tom wants to do a sting here. It's now time on the Fox Footy podcast for the weekly mailbag.
I'll do it the way I want.
Apologies.
Okay.
We do each other's intro.
There's some good questions coming through this week.
Yes. Plenty of anger, let's say.
Welcome to footy. Yeah.
Welcome to social media, AFL world.
Correct. Let's start with a footy question. Shane Pilkington, related to Carl, I hope, asks, why don't all teams try and tag Patrick Cripps? He was shut down against GWS and Essendon, yet looked like he had no one near him against the Lions.
It's easier said than done trying to shut down a guy like Patrick Cripps when he's such a unique player for his size and so dominant for his size. We have to talk about his game, though, Tom.
38-4.
That would be one of the greatest individual games by probably since the turn of the century, really. I know Brownie last on the couch compared Patrick Cripps' second half to a half that Chris Judd played where he had 5 goals from 10 disposals and ranked it sort of alongside that. He was inspirational.
It's one of the best individual performances I've seen live. Mm. The other one I thought of was Jason Akinmanis in the wet at the Gabba.
Oh, against
one
the
day.
Cats.
He was awesome.
Oh, 7
but
goals.
No, but this was great because it willed his team over the line after they were 37 points down at one stage, 10 minutes into the second quarter. But Jared Lyons did go to him for a bit, but I don't care what you say. You do not get 38 and kick 4 if you've got someone tagging you. If it's a proper tag, you might get 30 and kick 2, but you do not dominate a game like that if you've got someone actually on you properly.
Yeah. To me, this was just a personnel issue. I think, Jared Lyons is not the sort of player who should be tagging an opposition midfielder like that. Mitch Robinson can't
probably,
do it.
Oh, well, I thought he would have been probably the most appropriate for it.
Certainly has the physicality, but it's about the pace, I suppose.
More clubs should definitely do it because he's clearly the barometer. If Patrick Coops didn't have the game he did on Saturday, I don't think Carlton are coming back from six goals down.
Also, really like Sam Walsh. People say, oh, he's... I don't get the criticism for him. He's a bit small. He's a bit sort of run of the mill. The other criticism was that he's sort of a safe number one pick.
He's not a game winner.
I'm sorry.
Kane Corn said that, didn't he?
He could absolutely win a Brownlow the way he plays. Yeah. The only thing holding him back for winning a Brownlow is the way he looks, because he's actually not that noticeable, sort of brown hair, mid-sized. Yeah. But he's a superstar. Finds space, moves laterally, hits targets, finds a lot of the ball, works hard. He apparently runs further than any other Carlton player. Every game.
He'll be a captain of an AFL club one day.
Yeah. Ed Curno too, by the way, going to Lachie Neal in the second half, having such a huge impact.
Big from David Teague. Well done to him.
Yes. We have a few questions about the what's the word of the week for fans to not to say.
Yep.
Glenn asks. We've talked about that discussion. Sam asks, let's bring some positivity to the ever-under-siege Tex Walker.
Taylor.
Is he the most effective field kick on either side of his body for a big man in the game?
I can't think of another one for a big man.
Buddy Franklin's a pretty good kick.
But not in his right foot, though.
Right foot for balance, and that is it. He is. He's great on both feet, Tex. He's got some weaknesses as well, and he's proven them this year, but his performance standing up late in the game on the weekend was critical.
Not just him as well. Like in that last quarter, Rory Sloane really stood up. Hugh Greenwood, who'll probably get dropped again, I think, this week, took a big contested mark. But where does this leave Bryce Gibbs after he was dropped for a third time, Tom? Something's really fishy going on there. If it is about his defensive work, surely he would have kept his spot considering the game that he played on Clayton Oliver in Northern Territory a couple of weeks ago. So I'm not 100% sure where this leaves Bryce Gibbs.
Yeah, I got a message from someone saying the reason behind Gibbs being continuously dropped is that Scott Camporelli does not really rate him. He wants him to be harder and inside mid. Something is not. He keeps pointing
out to Camporelli, the assistant coach.
He's the midfield coach.
Yeah.
He keeps pointing out to Pike. They knew what they were getting. Why?
Well, because the assistant coach is having a bit more of a say here in the match committee than the senior coach and other coaches.
Well, I think Pike's not more than a say, but when you are a midfielder and the person working directly with you, i.e. the midfield coach, is saying they're not hard enough.
Pike respecting his assistant's opinions.
Yeah. Also, Adelaide have next to no injuries. So this is pretty much their best 22.
Yeah.
I was thinking about it before because it reminds me of the Australian cricket team.
Oh, of course.
Like, that's great. You can have Shaun Marsh and Usman Khawaja, and you can have the best 11 batsmen in the country, but you've got to have the balance right.
Mm.
So Bryce Gibbs is absolutely in the best 22 players at the Crows, but there's no point having 10 of the same midfielders all trying to fit into the same spot. And I think that is probably – everyone's looking for something fishy, and I'm not saying there definitely isn't something fishy, but I do trust that source that told me that.
Okay.
You know your Crows stuff. Speaking of which, we talked about the Crows a little bit. On the couch, you broke a story about Melbourne having some interest in defender Alex Keith.
Yeah, he's out of contract at the end of the year. I think.
Why are the D's looking for another key defender?
Well, they want to release Lever, and they want some more flexibility with Steve May.
So to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not bad from you, Maxie. I just think Adelaide have got it wrong so many times in playing hardball with contracts. Keith is in All-Australian form, and if he's not, he's very close to being in All-Australian form.
Showdown medalist.
Yes, he's 27 and will be 28 by the time next year starts, but they need to give him a three-year deal on good money because at the moment he's being well underpaid for what he's producing.
He's a young 27, 28 because he doesn't have a lot of games on his body.
Exactly right.
Which is a big part of it. I will just float this. I mean, we haven't seen a lot of Lever at Melbourne since he left the Crows, but we've seen Dodet shine in that same role. Is there a possibility that playing in the Crows system inflates the value of those defenders?
I think playing in a good team inflates the value of every player.
Absolutely.
And Dustin Martin was a superstar in 2017. And I'm not criticising him at all here.
Hey, what are you saying, Tom?
He played amazing footy, the best season potentially ever. But when you're running ahead of the ball and you know it's going to get to you, it's a lot easier than getting behind the ball. And actually, Nathan Jones won't mind me saying this. He said it off air last night that when you're losing, you run a lot further than when you're winning.
Mm.
And the GPS numbers skyrocket for the players in losing teams. And when you win, you're actually not as much because you're just predicting where the ball's going to go and you're going to get it. So I think playing in a good team inflates your value regardless of what position you're in.
I just wonder, as I said, we haven't really seen enough Lever to know whether he is as good as we thought he was at the Crows while at Melbourne. But given how well Dodet, we thought Dodet would step into that role and play really well, but maybe not as well as he did.
Any more mailbag?
Yes. Heath Buxton asks, has anyone seen
Heath Buxton? Sorry, Heath who? Max?
Heath Buxton.
That's
Heath Buxton.
Okay, yep.
That's someone else.
Yeah.
Has anyone seen Gil? So I see him on weekends sometimes because I live a few doors down from
him. Has anyone seen what, sorry?
Gil.
Oh, what? Okay.
Has anyone seen Gil is the question from Heath Buxton.
And I was saying
not
yes.
Not the Simpsons character, old Gil. Like, couldn't sell a house, old Gil.
Oh, you know he couldn't. That's right.
I don't think my place is as expensive as his is.
So you live near Gil?
I literally live several doors down from Gil McLaughlin.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Really? How many doors down do you think?
Max could do a literal doorstop.
When the coaches come for the night at Gil's, I'm going to sit out front with a little camping seat, hold up my sign, "Yay, coaches!" and get them all to sign it.
So you do see Gil. I think Gil doesn't talk as much as he should as the CEO.
Right.
I think Steve Hocking is underrepresents himself in the media as well. I don't know why the AFL isn't completely accessible at the top level. I think the same about Cricket Australia. I think the same about most sporting governing bodies.
Mm.
I don't get it. I think if you want an interview with someone high up at league level, it should be pretty easy to get. Whereas at the moment, it's next to impossible. And I think that's a real issue with the transparency and the optics of the league.
Yeah, it's all the optics.
One more. Mal asks about Braden Sire.
Yes.
How did you rate his return to senior footy, and what is the likelihood of him re-signing with the Pies?
I was about to say, he was solid, wasn't he, Braden Sire, who, of course, came in after an injury to a...
To Dane Beams,
to Dane Beams, who's probably going to miss the rest of the season, Dane Beams, which is a bit of a
23 touches, 9 tackles.
He's always been a ball magnet. He came in after having over 30 in the VFL, and they've been consistent numbers for him. Gary Lyon floated, I reckon, after round 3 or 4, that Essendon would be absolutely perfect destination for Braden Sire. They need a player of his ball magnet and hard edge skills there at the Bombers. I think if he wants grander and more frequent opportunities, he should look elsewhere. But Collingwood have shown a lot of faith in him as well at the same time.
It's the age old question of these really top end teams. How do you manage the players on the fringe of these 22s? And Richmond, I think they're going to regret what they did last year.
With who?
With a number of their players
that, Miles and Corey Ellis.
Sam Lloyd.
Because even though they're not senior players and you need to pay Tom Lynch to come to the club, it can really hurt if you get some injuries. And it's a real difficult balancing act. And again, it proves how Hawthorn and Brisbane won 3 flags in a row in the modern era is quite incredible, given what we've seen the last few years with Richmond being a dominant team, winning 1 flag, and even Geelong in 07, 09 and 11 not being able to win consecutive flags.
Yeah. I think it's just the age-old question, as you said.
Some good questions from the mailbag. You can always tweet us anytime at Fox Footy.
And Ben Waterworth.
Round 13 tips and cups coming up.
Yes.
Adelaide and Richmond on Thursday night taking on each other for the Chris Knights Cup.
Nice. Not Kane Johnson?
It played too many games.
Heavily discussed. Okay.
Yes.
This will be at the Adelaide Oval. It's hard to tip against the Crows then based on their performance against GWS.
Yeah, I'm going Adelaide. Yeah. I know that Richmond has won there before. But they're just depleted at the moment. Mm. And I was watching...
They beat Port there this season.
They did.
Crows off a 5-day break. Tigers off a 6-day break.
Yeah, I was watching the Tigers against Geelong and I've got no faith in them anymore. I think they actually tried quite hard, but it's just not working at all. Quarters 2 and 3 were terrible for the Tigers.
Oh, so bad.
We have gone off them very quickly as for how much we were talking at Richmond not long ago.
This is true.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not ruling a line through them to be competitive deep in the season.
They can still win the flag.
I asked you that last week. I don't think they can win the flag. I think they can make top four.
If you can make top four, you can win the flag.
Yeah, maybe.
Essendon and Hawthorn.
I stand corrected.
That's a rule, I'd say.
On Friday night, the Dons and the Hawks for the Danny Jacobs Cup.
Mm. The Derm's favourite team cup.
Oh, yes. Dermot Brereton Cup.
Essendon.
The Bombers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hawthorn lost last time out, so they'll win. That's how they go.
That's actually how they work, isn't it?
It's like your sort of rebound effect sort of situation. Ooh.
What did Essendon have last week? They had a bye.
I think both teams coming off the bye is my
your understanding slash
my understanding of the truth.
I can confirm. Well, yeah.
How is the rebound effect going, Tom?
It's a guideline.
Yes.
Well,
you're doing well in the tipping this year, so maybe you're secretly following it. And
I was really annoyed because I tipped Carlton. I was so proud of myself for tipping Carlton, and then I bloody tipped GWS instead of Adelaide.
But that's not a surprise.
Yeah, but I should have got 5 out of 6, not 4 out of 6.
The Gold Coast Suns hosting St Kilda. This is for the Andrew McWalter Cup.
Of course it is.
Maverick Weller as well.
Yes.
It's a Riverway Stadium in Townsville.
Yes, first game in Townsville for premiership points.
How does that play into it, guys? What are our thoughts on Riverway Stadium?
I've never heard of Riverway Stadium. I've been to Townsville a couple of times, but never been to Riverway Stadium.
I'm aware of the ads for it.
North Queensland Cowboys territory, though, so see if they get the cut through. I don't know.
Jason Tuamalolo, how's he going to go?
JT.
I think the bye came at the perfect time for the Saints, and they'll be able to rest, recuperate, and go again, and I think they'll beat the Suns here.
I could see the Suns winning this 59-57. Something
yuck scoreline.
I'll tip St Kilda, but watch for that.
Next game is Fremantle and Port Adelaide, and you'll appreciate this one, Tom, for the Nick Lower Cup.
Yep.
More a fan of Ed, the Big Brother contestant, actually.
Yeah. Good knowledge. Daniel Pearce could have been an option as well.
Bit too soon.
I always offer these secondary options, but you often get the best ones.
The problem is you're trying to pick players that we know. That's not the point of the cups. Supposed to be mystery men from 2003 who played 12 games across two clubs. That's the dream of the cup.
Essentially, that's what it is, yes.
I can't argue that at all, Maxi. Freo, I'm tipping at home.
Ooh. I mean, we talked about Port playing quite well. They have the premiership profile going on.
If they are to be a contender, this is the game they should win. Fremantle will be a tough task for them.
Yes.
But what the Dockers now without Rory Lobb and Alex Pearce. They've lost those two players essentially for the season since that Collingwood win.
And Port played very well at Optus earlier this year, beating West Coast.
They did too.
I'll tip the power.
Great performance.
Interested in the cup for the next game, Ben.
Carlton and Western Bulldogs, a lot to choose from. This is for the Jason Tutt Cup.
Yes.
That is a great, great cup. One that I would be proud to even
Mark Austin, very stiff as well.
Billy Gowers never played for Carlton.
Oh, he's on the rookie list, though.
Yeah, but never played. Did you ever play for the team?
Well, no, there's an exception coming up for North Melbourne and GWS. Oh,
okay. I look forward to that.
You have to with the franchise.
Do we back David Teague and Carlton again or not?
Or do we back the Bulldogs, or are they a complete best?
You know what?
They were pre-buy. Who knows what the buy might do for them,
That's
though.
What I'm thinking.
Okay, my information is the Brisbane Lions were really flat before the Carlton game, and flat in a way they were just tired. Mm. And
Jared Healy say on the couch last night that he sensed that Fagan was really stressed, or Gary Lyon, one of the two, said that he was quite stressed pre-game?
Didn't hear the word stress.
Pretty sure I heard that.
I mean, it was 40-3, so they made a good start.
Yeah, it's true.
But that was overinflated for how the game was going.
That's right.
And Carlton dominated the first 10 minutes with so many inside 50s.
But my intel was that Brisbane were pretty flat at training on Thursday night before the game, and they're just limping towards the bye. So I think, although it was great that Carlton won, it was a little bit of a false economy, and they're not going to win two in a row, so I'm tipping the Dogs.
I would as well. I mean, if they have to have Cripps get 38-4 every time they're going to win, that's going to be tough, as good as he is.
And rounding out round 13 will be North Melbourne and the Giants at Blundstone Arena for the Paul Ahern Cup.
Oh, now, he didn't play a game for the Giants.
He didn't play a game for the Giants.
Is there no one that played for two teams? Technically,
Dom Tyson, but he's still playing. He's still is Paul Ahern. I think these are the only two players that have gone across the
This is actually a really hard tip in Tasmania, I think. Although, I don't think the Giants are going to lose twice in a row, so I'm going for the Giants.
So, North has to win this if they're any chance of playing finals. But if they win this, they are a chance of playing finals.
Okay.
North, I think, is the... Alongside Hawthorn, North is the most difficult team to tip at the moment.
What about the Sydney Swans, who have the bye this week, Maxi?
They won't lose.
Are they a chance to potentially play finals, remarkably, in 2019?
Here's the thing. Right. So they play Geelong again this year, probably lose that. They play GWS again, probably lose that.
Yep.
They're a 50-50 chance to win at least every other game.
They've got three of their next four at the SCG. Their next four, they're a huge chance.
So Hawthorn at the SCG, Gold Coast at the SCG, revenge game for last
year. Yes, that was a weird game.
Essendon, revenge game.
Yep.
Carlton, Fremantle in Perth will be tough.
Yep.
Hosting Geelong, Giant Stadium for the Giants. That's a tough 2 weeks. That three-week patch might decide their season. Port in Adelaide, Melbourne and St Kilda. That's not a murderer's row.
Yeah, they could.
They win all those games except the Cats and the Giants. They're 12-10.
And that plays finals this year, 100%.
Possibly.
12-10 plays finals.
Their percentage might not be great. If they get those wins, their percentage might be a lot.
But you can play finals with 11 wins this year.
Mm. I don't think so.
No. Really?
13 wins has become, in the 18-team competition, 13 wins has been the par, really.
No,
it?
No one's
a guarantee.
No one's missed with 13. Mm. Four teams missed with 12 last year. I think you'd be very unlucky to miss with 12
If we're
year.
Starting to look towards that kind of fixture now, it means that the run home on foxfooty.com.au will be back.
When does that start?
Well, normally after the buys.
After the buys.
Mm. I don't like these buy rounds, on another note. Why do you have 3 weeks of it?
Did this last week.
I still don't like them. We're two weeks in, I don't like it.
That makes sense.
Have 1 week off. I know why they don't want to do that, the AFL, but six games feels like we're half pregnant every weekend. And being pregnant is not fun, from what I hear. And being half pregnant 3 weekends in a row sucks even more.
What?
Like in a social
what I'm saying is they're trying to, I know what they're trying to do here.
No, I'm just confused about your analogy.
Well, half pregnant is a saying because they're sort of half.
Why is that a saying?
Have you never heard half pregnant is a saying?
No, I have, but I'm just questioning the logic of it.
Well, I didn't make up the saying. I'm simply reusing
secretly
it.
Working for MamaMia.com on the side as well.
Don't shoot the messenger here.
With Billy Fitzsimmons.
Do you agree with me about the buys?
No, I don't.
Do you, Max?
I talked about this last week.
And what do you think?
You do two, you do them a third of the way in, two thirds of the way in, and you have your AFLW grand final in the first bye week. Okay. It's simple.
Talk about AFLW. I'm just talking about having a bye here.
It's a bonus.
But don't worry about AFLW.
It does feel weird having
until
six
next
games.
February. Let's just talk about having a bye weekend, round 12. No one plays. Done. We can all move on with our lives.
He's fired up, Tom Morris.
I wouldn't call it round 12 then because no one's playing.
I'll call it round 11. Call it whatever.
No, I wouldn't call it a round. They're not playing.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Just have a week off.
And we go back to 22 rounds.
That's great.
Yay!
It's better.
We finished on an amicable note on the Fox Footy podcast. Keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.
Don't stop me. I'm having a good time.